Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel wrote, "As long as one dissident is in prison, our freedom will not be true. As long as one child is hungry, our life will be filled with anguish and shame." What all these victims need above all is to know that they are not alone, that we are not forgetting them, that when their voices are stifled, we shall lend them ours. That while their freedom depends on ours, the quality of our freedom depends on theirs. Martin Luther King Jr. is best known for peacefully leading the Black Civil Rights Movement in the U.S. In 1965, he helped to organize the Selma to Montgomery marches. King followed the example of an enslaved black man in the 1780s in Britain, who had become the emblem of the black abolitionist movement, by bending down on one knee and praying outside the courthouse. He was praying with his fellow marchers for equality and freedom. 50 years later, in 2016, U.S. quarterback Colin Kaepernick risked his career by adopting the bent knee kneeling posture while they were singing the national anthem at an NFL football game. Kaepernick was alone in this protest. He was sidelined, and the league did not back him. But recently, there's been a wave of people who've had a change of heart. We've seen entire football teams, black and white players, coaches, and managers, bending one knee, arm in arm, assuming the deferential kneeling stance. They are shining a light on systemic oppression. Martin Luther King, a Baptist minister, knelt down to the highest authority in prayer. But there's still injustice, and so many athletes, many in the military, veterans, and some politicians are reviving this means of protest. Taking a knee has now become a symbol of peaceful resistance to intolerance and injustice. It's an expression of a desire for equality and freedom. Society is still greatly divided on the lines of race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, and country of origin. The established authority often responds to those who call out these injustices by using violent language, name-calling, twisting the point. What's at stake for them is their power, their assumed authority. What's at stake for them is the corrupted status quo. This isn't new. Consider today's gospel and the challenge we heard from the chief priests and elders when they approached Jesus. Keep in mind also that their challenge happens just after Jesus' triumphant entrance into Jerusalem and the clearing out and cleansing of the temple. Both these events would have seemed inciting to the Roman occupiers. The chief priests and elders held positions of power, but did not necessarily represent the needs of the people or even the majority views of their people. Also, their power was fragile under the scrutiny of the occupying Roman force. They are threatened, and threatened by Jesus. And so they ask Jesus, "By what authority is he doing all these things? Who gave him this authority?" These questions are key, because authority is not something one just takes. It has to be earned, and it has to be lived out. Jesus' very presence and his activities over the years preceding his entry into Jerusalem were peaceful, and they were revolutionary. He was challenging the very order of society. Those who had something to lose and felt threatened. Those who stood to benefit from the social order, from systemic injustice, felt threatened. the chief priests and elders felt threatened. Jesus accuses them of having become so entrenched in their ways that they don't recognize the righteousness of John the Baptist. They don't recognize Jesus or God manifest in the world. The hypocrisy that Jesus is pointing out is the same one that Paul cautions the Philippians against. That is, not to live by selfish ambition or conceit. It's the same one that the NFL players and all those who kneel in solidarity with them are bringing to light. When someone in authority's words don't match their actions, it's natural and right to be angry. It's right to question that authority, to take a knee, and to name the untruth. Jesus disrupts the social order, raises up those at the lowest echelons of society, raises up the prostitutes and tax collectors, and exposes those who count pennies when restoration of destroyed life's infrastructures is urgent. When reserves have no clean water, when those who identify as LGBTQ are marginalized, persecuted, or killed. As Christians, we bend a knee to the authority of Jesus. As Christians, we're called out into the wilderness to unbind the chains of oppression, unbind our own chains, unbind the chains of those we encounter, and to spread love. The world, our vineyard, is in dire need of care. As Christians, it's our call, our commission with God to tend the fragile earth, to support one another, and even to receive help when we're the ones who are in need. There's a lot of work to be done. We can say we'll do it and not do it, or we can overcome our desire to downplay what needs to be done, perhaps out of complacency or apathy or cynicism, and have a change of heart and go out into the world to love and serve God. Go out and take a knee to injustice. Make sure that those who are suffering injustice know they're not alone. We are with them. God is with them. Lend our voices to those who have lost theirs, like the people of Myanmar. Do our part towards reconciliation with Canada's Indigenous peoples, and become aware and learn to help those suffering from mental illness or incarceration. And when we're bound by our own chains of loneliness, or our own struggles, or our own mental illnesses, we remember that God is among us, at work in and around us, in the wilderness, providing life-giving water from stones. It's easy to get wrapped up in the misery and despair that is around us, and it's easy to lose hope when we find ourselves in our own wildernesses, thirsty and hungry for what could be, or some warped memory of what once was. It's easy to forget that God abides with us. But there's evidence of God's presence. We just need to give our ear and open our eyes. Each one of us here can testify to God's work in the world. Each one of us here has been a witness. This week alone, we've watched the injured veterans at the Invictus Games. We've seen over the last few weeks the generous response of millions to the tragic aftermath of the hurricane after hurricane after hurricane. And we see God in our loved ones' faces, in first responders, in the tight grasp of a child's hand. We experience it together when we celebrate the Eucharist. When we see God at work, we, like the son who said no, but then changed his mind and worked in the field anyway, like the prostitutes or tax collectors, like the established church and clergy, like each and every one of us, have a chance to turn around and ask ourselves, how can we do the will of God? By turning to God, we can change our behavior, change our concept of authority to that of God's authority, to authority that's authentic, to authority where the words and the actions match one another and promises are kept. It's to this authority that we take a deferential knee, to the authority of love and truth and life. Indeed, God is among us, at work in us, enabling us, empowering us, and giving us authority to work for God's good pleasure. Amen.